We are Sarva. The future of education starts here.
Hey, welcome to today's episode of Everyday Genius by Simply Conscious. I'm your host, Pete Craig. And today, I'm excited to welcome someone who is an award-winning social justice entrepreneur. He's a business coach. He's a writer. He's been featured in like the 30 Under 30 for Inc. magazine. He's recognized for breaking like racial barriers in the tech startup ecosystems and so many other things that it would take me most of this interview to kind of list them all. So rather than kind of do that, let's kind of dive right in and welcome Raz Azam. Welcome, Raz.
Peace. Thanks, Pete. I certainly appreciate that introduction, man. I forget about all of the stuff that I've done, but you kind of make me sound like I'm doing a little bit of something, huh?
Well, you are, and that's, you know, it's one of the reasons why, you know, why I kind of reached out and wanted to bring you on the show, because it just seemed like what you're doing is there's so much in the world of entrepreneurship and business that is just, you know, kind of business for business sake. So it's kind of like technology for technology's sake. But what you're doing and you know, with the businesses that you're involved in, and we'll talk about those in a second, is you're solving real problems. You know, so you've identified a problem that you experienced, and now you've kind of created a solution to kind of make that problem go away or to ease that problem for other people. Yeah, and yeah. You know, for me, that's true entrepreneurship. That's true, you know, kind of business innovation is when it's solving a real problem, not just, you know, making a better phone for the sake of making a better phone. Yeah, you know, this is right. You know, you're addressing real issues, you know, for real people, and I love that about what you guys are doing.
Thank you. That was one of the things that my partner and I really talked about fresh out of college, is where, you know, studying sociology at Morehouse College in Atlanta, Georgia, really the same college and the same major that Martin Luther King Jr. studied and so understanding, having a deep understanding of social problems, but not wanting to just continually study them and write about them and, you know, make them known, but to actually develop sustainable solutions for social problems. And so that's really the mission. That's really the goal. And, you know, actually very proud and humbled to be doing this work.
Yeah. But before we really dive in, there's a couple of questions that I always like to ask guests. And the first one is, what's kind of like alive in you right now? What's kind of like you really got you kind of like, you know, juiced up about life? What's got you buzzing about where we are in society right now?
Man, that's a great question. You know, really for me, I think what's really got me buzzing is, you know, with change brings opportunity. Quick change brings quick opportunity. Great change brings great opportunity. And so the coronavirus COVID-19 pandemic, global pandemic, has essentially caused everyone to shift, right? So everything is in flux. Everything is changing right now. And so seeing how, you know, everything is transforming. And so the different opportunities that are presenting themselves, the new way that society will be ordered, right? Education has been affected, business has been affected, politics have been affected. So really just being in position, right? Noticing where the opportunities are and then putting ourselves in position to take advantage of those opportunities is really what's been on my mind, because I know that the opportunities that are presenting themselves right now are really once in a lifetime opportunities, maybe twice in a lifetime, but just turned 30 a couple of weeks ago, so I know that I'll never be 30 years old again, right, with all of this going on. So with the wisdom that I've gained from the past 10 years of actually, you know, being in the field, living life, living in several different cities, living in several different states, having worn several different hats in my career, and taking all of that knowledge, all of that experience, and being able to put that towards investing, business development, self-care, right, health and wellness, and just really all of that. So for me, it's an exciting time because, again, change brings opportunity, and there's always an opportunity in the whirlwind of calamity and chaos. So really, you know, on one hand, looking out for those opportunities, and on the other hand, really maintaining just a positive attitude with all of the, you know, the things that are going on in the world right now that one could really do in grave negatives, right? But yeah, making sure that we keep our mindset fresh, keep our mindset sharp, and just, you know, continue to look for opportunities to execute.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, it's a great leveler, isn't it? This time that we're in right now, it's kind of like, because it's not just localized, it's not just in one country, it's kind of like worldwide. It's almost kind of like brought everyone to the same level. Everyone's experiencing pain at the same time. Everyone's experiencing challenges at the same time. I don't think it matters who you are. This is something that's quite spread across humanity, not just the poor, not just the underprivileged. This is affecting everyone.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, just looking at kind of your background, you've been an entrepreneur like since you were 16. Your first business when you were like 16.
Yep. I could actually go to my first entrepreneurial experience. I was about 11 years old. It was the summer before I was going to sixth grade, and my one of my neighbors wanted her plants watered every day, and so she would pay me $2 every day to water her plants. And so after a month, right, I had about $60, and I was able to buy my first pair of sneakers for middle school as I was going into the sixth grade. And so after that, I was like, okay, this is where it's right. And I think that was also my first experience of understanding that people have needs and fulfilling a need for a person, whether that be easing some pain or providing a game for them to get to the next level, was pretty much my first experience there. And then that watering plants ended up turning into cutting grass for other neighbors on the street. And then, of course, once I got my license, I was able to throw the lawnmower in the trunk, saved up enough money, was able to buy my own truck. Yeah. And so I had, you know, about 20 yards across the city, east side and west side of Cleveland, Ohio. And that was my first experience of, you know, equity, creative control, and time freedom. And so I really knew at 16, 17 that I was spoiled, that I would never ever want to go back. And so I've dipped into white collar careers or what have you, and dipped into office settings and so on and so forth. But the fulfillment of having that equity, time control, and creative freedom is unmatched. It's truly unmatched. And so, yeah, man, I've been an entrepreneur for quite some time, and I really learned how to develop business plans when I was 14 years old. And so that was, I was actually selling candy prior to developing a whole landscaping outfit with some of my friends, and won second place in a business plan competition. And it's funny because that instance, that business plan competition, taught me that people are emotion-driven creatures. And so in our presentation, we didn't appeal to emotion. We just appealed to the numbers. We appealed to the logic, as well as just our own ethic of being, astute young entrepreneurs. But we didn't appeal to emotion in our presentation. And the group, the business that actually won first place, they had an emotional appeal in their presentation, and that's what sent them over the top. And so I never forgot that ethos, pathos, and logos, you have to appeal to emotion. And so that was kind of my first real marketing lesson that I took on the chin right there. So yeah, man, it's been a while. 15 years, and you know, from 14 years old, I'm 30, so I pretty much have been an entrepreneur longer than I haven't been an entrepreneur. So, man.
When you kind of think about what you've done and what you're doing now, where would you say your kind of genius lies? Where's the part of what you do where you feel most in flow?
Man, that's a great question. And I was pondering today what is my genius, what is my gift? And I think recently I've come to the conclusion that I've known for quite some time that I'm a pretty deep thinker, right? And people know that about me, to where I make connections. My memory is pretty good, right? I'm able to recall passages and recite, so on and so forth. But I also think that for me, what really separates me is that according to my Myers-Briggs personality type, I am an INTJ, but the T stands for thinking, and you can be a thinker or a feeler. My thinking and my feeling are pretty much 50-50, right? And so for me, that indicates that I'm utilizing my conscious mind more so than I'm using my subconscious mind, right, my feeler, but they are still both pretty much in sync, pretty much balanced. And so I think that being able to think strategically, but also having a level of emotional intelligence that I'm able to balance my thinking. And so I'm able to balance the numbers and the spreadsheets with actual real life, with the actual praxis, with the actual like human experience. And so being able to work with others, I know there are some people who are able to lead very effectively, and there are others who are able to follow very effectively. I think what makes me different, what makes me special, is my ability to lead as well as to be a team player. I think, you know, having that that emotional intelligence, being able to be in tune, being able to be intuitive while also balancing that out with cognitive functioning, I think that's what makes me different. And I've recently noticed that, recently come to that conclusion, because obviously this has been me my whole life. And so stepping outside of myself and being able to say, okay, why have I experienced, you know, this substantial amount of success in my lifetime in a relatively short period? What is it about me that makes me different? And in short, man, I think it's the balance between my conscious mind and my subconscious mind.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? I think more and more, and you may be seeing this as well, but more and more in business, I see there's a switch, there's a need for people to develop that part of themselves. Yeah, consumers are far more savvy these days. They've got far more choice. Yeah, it's not a case. You do have to kind of be able to, like you say, you have to be able to appeal to that emotional side. You have to understand what the real problem is, and you have to be able to empathize with that problem is, and then be able to communicate that problem in a way that isn't that doesn't make people feel uncomfortable, that doesn't make them feel like, you know, second class, but just lets them know that you're aligned with them, that you understand their pain. This is why, you know, you're solving this problem for them.
Indeed. I think this, I think what you just described can be kind of the model is knowledge, wisdom, and understanding, right? Knowledge is knowing what to say. Wisdom is knowing how to say it or when to say it.
Yeah.
And then understanding is knowing how to say it so that it can be received. So what to say, when to say, and then of course how to say it so it can be received. And so myself as a writer, as a storyteller, as a relationship manager, right? Understanding what to say, when to say, and how to say it to that particular person so that is extremely important in today's world. It's really always been important, but there's much more emphasis on it now because emotional intelligence is such a hotbed topic now that Generation Y and Generation Z are easing into the workforce. The culture of professionalism is beginning to change, and so the rules around the engagement of professionals is beginning to change. And so, you hit it on the head.
How do you think? So yeah, you're in the kind of technology space as well as in the people space. When you look at kind of the future, the next 10 years, the next 20 years, there's, with the advances that we're seeing in technology already, there's my personal view is that there's going to be a massive kind of shift, you know, towards those soft skills and people having to have those soft skills, because so many of the kind of typical jobs that people would have done are going to be automated. So that soft skill thing becomes, you know, massively important.
Precisely. You know, millennials and Generation Z, right? We grew up with technology. So for us, automation really isn't impressive, right? You know, things being quick, things being at our fingertips, that's what we know. But having that personalized experience, having somebody call you on the phone and use your first name, or seeing, you know, some icon or something pop up that is speaking directly to you, that's what gets us impressed. That's that boutique experience, that personalized feel. And so, you know, when we call customer service because our app is working incorrectly, right, are we getting an automated system, or are we talking to a real person who's able to really connect with us and really be able to understand, you know, the language that we're speaking with our words, but yeah, also the language that we're speaking with our tonality and with our overall vibration. Mm.
Do you see that being a challenge, you know, for the generations that are growing up, you know, knowing technology and with technology, you know, so that there's an element, and I certainly see it, you know, around me, that there are parts of, you know, kind of society where they're just so ingrained that they've lost the ability to kind of communicate. They've almost lost the ability as well to kind of feel, you know, feel emotion and kind of connect with another human. Do you see that as a problem, you know, within society? Do you see that as a problem?
That's a great question. Give me 1 second. I'm getting a call. Okay. I do see that as, I won't say a problem, but I'll frame it as an opportunity.
Right? Opportunity or a challenge, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Precisely. I see it as certainly a challenge as well as an opportunity. And I think that's, you know, with our business models, is that we are tech-enabled companies, but our business is centered around the people. It's centered around who it is that we're serving. And so I think, you know, as you just mentioned, the companies into the future that have that level of business model innovation, to where not just product innovation, but the model itself and how they're delivering the product, when they're able to integrate people into that model, that's where we're going to see the innovation. Those will be the companies that will set the precedent for the next 100 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And so thinking about that, then how are you guys within the businesses that, that you're involved with, how are you encouraging that? How are you kind of rolling that out? How are you making sure that that happens?
Okay. So I am a co-founder of a private equity firm, Bro & Company. And the very first flagship company that we developed underneath the Bro & Company umbrella is indeed Bro Capital, BREAUX Capital, CAPITAL. And we are a cooperatively owned and operated financial technology and services company. So for us, our business model itself is based around getting people to cooperate, right? Getting them to work together, and then also providing that level of co-ownership. And this is of course born out of my experience as that 17-year-old entrepreneur who really wanted to be able to feel like I own a piece of this. And not just that I'm working here, but the success of this company also means success for me in my personal life, right? So that way I have much more of an affinity when I'm coming to work. I have much more of a connection to the people that I'm working with, because we all have a shared destiny, right? So again, my background is in sociology. So I'm always thinking about groups of people, how they relate to one another, how they fit in, identity, so on and so forth, right? And it wasn't until much later, after I graduated from college, that I realized that all of this science is pretty much the science, the social science that undergirds marketing, which undergirds, right, sales, psychology, so on and so forth. And so for us, at the very core of it, we bring people into the model. And I think one of the often understated innovations of Bro Capital is the fact that we've been able to bring members, Black men in particular, from all across the world, not just in the US, but we've got members from the UK, members from Haiti, members from Yorubaland in West Africa, from Arizona to LA to Chicago, so on and so forth. And these members have oftentimes never met one another, but we provide the framework in order for them to work with one another to get jobs done, to get business done, and to be profitable as a collective. And so that's pretty much, I think, one of the primary things that separates us. And that, of course, you know, if I were to put my money on it, history will, of course, tell that story as we move into the future, because I think that right now we're in a time to where, you know, we're going, as they say, we're going back to the future, right? We're going eating natural foods again, right? People are reviving traditional spirituality, right? So on and so forth. And so when it comes to our community organization, when it comes to our business organization, we're taking a step back. And I often tell people we are ancient ideas married with modern technology, to where what we are doing, the concept of what we are doing and bringing people together to improve the quality of their lives, right, is nothing new. I'm sure you've been to a potluck before. I'm pretty sure you, your friends have, you know, put some money together to buy a pack of beers or something like that, right? And so that the concept of us leveraging each other's capital is nothing new, but I think that, you know, we've been able to leverage technology and tech-enabled solutions in order to do what our predecessors 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago were unable to do, because now the world is much, much smaller. So instead of a hyper-local organization to improve the quality of Black men's lives and their financial wellness, we've been able to leverage technology to do that and to build a community that actually spans the globe.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's beautiful. So there's a couple of things that I want to like roll back on in a second. But first of all, I just want to touch on one thing that you said, you know, this idea about kind of pooling money. And that this being a, you know, this is something that's gone back, you know, centuries, and has been done, you know, time and time again across kind of multiple different kind of, you know, countries. And funnily enough, I interviewed a couple of months ago a lady from Nigeria who has a very similar type of business. So it's basically a technology fundraising business that provides provides finance, provides loans for small businesses. And she shared with me that, you know, something like 80% of businesses after 2 or 3 years there fail, not because the business isn't a good one, but because they don't have access to funding in order to scale and grow the business.
Yep.
So her business is about addressing that particular problem. But the way she set it up is it's based on, it's a people first approach again, much like yours. And it's based on it's based on something that within that particular locality, it's called a chimba. So basically a chimba is a group of people who come together in a particular village or a town, and they each agree to put in X amount of money, so maybe $50. So they all put $50 into the pot. One person's maybe the treasurer, and at the end of each month, one person gets that pot used for whatever they want. Yeah. And this is quite, yeah. So it's a cultural. So what she's created with technology is based on cultural kind of understanding, cultural behaviors, cultural practices. So everyone understands it, and everyone kind of gets it, and it's just so widely appreciated.
Yep, and that's it's so wonderful that you mentioned that, because, you know, we had the idea to found Bro Capital, which was based upon, right, the Tanda, the Susu, what you just mentioned, the Chimba, right? All of these things have been around for thousands of years, right? And I want to, if I may, modify my sister's statement that a lot of businesses fail because of lack of funding. I think a lot of businesses fail because of lack of access to capital,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Capital, because capital is much more than money, mm, right? Can be social capital, it can be financial capital, it can be spiritual, intellectual, right? We're living in a time to where intellectual property can be created in your bedroom, and then with the click of a button, disperse that throughout the world and begin to make money, begin to make impact, so on and so forth. And so that's one of the things with Bro Capital, is that we were founded with $500, right? And so we were born out of our experience of lacking access to that financial capital. But what we realize is that if we're able to leverage human capital, then we are able to fill in some of those gaps. And then, of course, the human capital is able to bring that financial capital. And it just, as you mentioned, right, another key word that I love as a sociologist is culture, right? Culture is extremely important. Once we start talking about ethics and we start talking about building a collective, I think it was, his name is escaping me right now, but there's a sociologist from Northern Africa, and he was one of the pioneers of the field, and he was studying rural communities versus urban communities. And one of the things that he noticed and one of the questions that he posed and wanted to find an answer to was, is that okay, if a group of people have weapons, right, swords or let's say guns, what makes those people point those guns in the same direction and shoot them at the same thing, right? How do we get these people to work together for the same aims? And so having that that cultural code, having those principles that the group can live by, that they can refer back to keep us, you know, on our true north, following our North Star, is extremely important. And so culture, capital, and we have a saying in Bro Capital that culture is indeed capital because of, you know, music that has come from West Africa to the shores of North America and has eventually, right, evolved into today what is known as rap music, which has taken the world by storm. And so, like I say, things that can be created in your bedroom from your experience of just living your daily life, you're able to spread that out, and then that becomes a form of capital or a form of currency that we're able to exchange back and forth. And so we're really living an exciting time right now. And I'm really excited that I was able to be born during this time, because I was watching an interview by Warren Buffett. Him and Jay-Z were talking about, you know, what differentiates them from their peers, what makes them successful. And one of the things that Warren Buffett mentioned, which was really powerful to me, is that the level of serendipity that comes along, right? There are certain advantages that we're just naturally born with, right? Where he said, you know, Warren Buffett was born to a father who was an accountant. He was born as a white 20th century, right? These things that he had no bearing over, but that were able to put him in position to do what he does, where, you know, I was born in the latter part of the 20th century, right? Coming into the 21st century. So I'm able to utilize this technology. I'm able to take advantage of, you know, my predecessors in social justice fights throughout the 20th century, 19th century, going all the way back into the 15th century, right, with 1492, and being able to build upon that and being able to take all of those pointers, all of that energy, that just the spirit, right, and the culture of all of that, and being able to bring it forth today. So it really is, man, a statement. What a time to be alive. It truly is. I don't take it for granted either.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, for sure. Tell us a little bit about why the story, or share a little bit of the story behind Kite Bro Capital, you know, the experience that led you guys to Kite, you know, that actually you need to do this.
Gotcha. Yeah, you see the smile come across my face on that question, man. I love telling this story. So, man, I could go all the way back to my birth to be able to tell this story, but I guess I'll start at in 2014, right? So my partner, my classmate from Morehouse College, he shoots me a message at the very end of 2013 after we graduated. He's like, yo, I got an opportunity to participate in a business accelerator program in Louisville, Kentucky, right? I'm originally from Ohio, and Kentucky is the state directly south of Ohio, right? They're separated by the Ohio River. And Ohio is history lesson, right? Ohio was considered a northern state during the Civil War, whereas Kentucky was considered a southern state during the Civil War. So once you cross the Ohio River, you're in a completely different cultural zone, if you will, right? And so we're going down to Kentucky to participate in a business accelerator program. And it was actually like there's a tri-state area. There's Indiana, Kentucky, so on and so forth, and Ohio. right? So we're going to the South to participate in this accelerator program, and we're first-time entrepreneurs, right? We're under the age of 25. We just graduated from college. I was about 23 at the time, and we are Black. So we have the three strikes against us, where we don't have any experience. We're also extremely young in terms of, you know, we haven't worked for Deloitte or Goldman Sachs or Wall Street or whatever the case may be. And then beyond that, we don't look like, so we don't have the cultural ties to the angel investors that would traditionally be investing in products or product development. And so with those three strikes against us, we realized, okay, this business accelerator can give us information, but as far as actually going through that capital raise, that funding raise, we're pretty much on our own. And another thing that we noticed is that there was the consistent question of, how much have you all raised during your friends and family round, yeah. Right? Yeah. And again, you know, with the racial wealth disparity or the disadvantages because of the history of chattel enslavement in America, right? My family doesn't have $25,000 that I can use for product development, mm-hmm. right? And so that friends and family round, we pretty much realize, okay, that that's going to be, if that's an issue for us, that's an issue for others. And so that's pretty much how we decided, okay, how can we create a sustainable capital resource to not only develop our businesses, but a resource to where we can invest and others' businesses who are in the same position as us, because we had already validated our market. We knew that we were tackling a problem, which is student loan debt, which is going to be a problem. It's going to be an issue for the foreseeable future. At this point, as the rising cost of education has gone up 1,000% versus, you know, housing, gas, food, so on and so forth, right? Rising at an exponential rate, literally. And so we figured, okay, what do we need to do? And Bro Capital was really meant to be a collective and somewhat of a fraternity of business owners and entrepreneurs, particularly for Black men, right? And once we realized, right, that this organization would need to be self-sustaining in and of itself, we're creating a sustainable solution that also needs to be sustained. Yeah. And so we, okay, how are we going to do this? And that's where we put the business model behind it, where, you know, we are essentially making money from membership, and we've recently moved into merchandise. So that's how we are able to sustain, but we've been able to invest in our members. We have an equity-based or an equity-driven culture to where we show love through equity, right? Where we want to be long-term partners. We want to be in it with you for the long haul. Mm. And one of the other things that we noticed was that there's a major difference of having people in your circle versus having people on your team, yeah. right? And so we wanted to create a culture to where we were all on the same team. Mm. It wasn't just something, you're in my circle and I can call you up, but I'm still going to be a client. It's going to be still going to be a client service provider relationship.
Yeah.
Create a culture around team, around family, right? For that, you know, that friends and family round. So that's where the name Bro Capital comes from. And we had, by the time we actually developed this concept, we were living in New Orleans at the time. And of course, New Orleans has a very French influenced history. And so that's where the name Bro, or I'll say the spelling Bro, comes from, is from that New Orleans influence, us being inspired to develop this while we were living in New Orleans.
Nice. Yeah, I love that. I think, I love that story when I heard it. And I think it was a video that Darius had recorded where I first saw that that message and that story, that backstory. So, thanks for sharing that. You've talked quite a bit about, you know, this idea of capital being more than just money. Yeah, and 100% agree. You know, it's within traditional kind of investment, it very much is a you and us or a them and us situation, where people put the money in and it's almost, it perpetuates the disconnection between the haves and the have nots, or the R's and the wannabes.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, you're going to give me some money so as I can hopefully get to where you are at some point, but I'm always going to need more money from you in order to rise that, to climb that ladder. So I love how you talk about this idea that this is team. This is not just someone in your circle that you can call up who can give you some advice or arrange for some more money to help grow the business. This is actually, you're in this together.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, man.
I think that's super important. Just going back to something else that you said before, and you talked about this idea that we've got this ancient kind of wisdom within us, this kind of spiritual side to us, and that's something that at Simply Conscious we're trying to help people do is kind of help them reconnect with that inner genius, that inner wisdom, reignite that. How do you do that? Are there tools that you use or are there things that you do to try and kind of keep yourself centered, self-grounded, and connect with Earth, I guess. I mentioned that I was talking to Jemaya, who's one of your members at Bro Capital, and with his business, we were just talking about how there's this connection that seems to have been lost over time, but there is this very real connection between us and the Earth that we walk on, the ground that we walk on, the food that we eat. I'd just love any view that you've got on that and how you keep that connection.
Man, so personally, how I keep that connection is I am a certified herbalist in Unani medicine, which is commonly known as Greco-Islamic medicine. I studied at the Ibn Sina Institute, which is headquartered in the UK. And so for me, understanding the anatomy, understanding the body, and then of course understanding how our body is related and the relationship that we have to plants was extremely, extremely powerful for me and maintaining my connection. And also, I was telling my brother yesterday is that plants and people, from my perspective, are very similar, or I have a very similar relationship with them, in the sense that it's very difficult for me to be around plants or people for an extended period of time and to see them lacking some type of nourishment or something that's keeping them from their growth, right? From their optimal growth. And so, air quality, right? The sun, being able to appreciate. I was actually, the type of person that I am, I'm an introvert. And so, but my job requires me to do a lot of talking, a lot of acting. And so at the end of the day, when I'm really, really tired, and not physically tired, but mentally tired, mentally exhausted, fatigued, I found that what really calms me down, what really gets my mind quieted, is just listening to the sounds outside of my window. Which are, the birds, which are the crickets, the wind blowing through the trees. And really just taking all of the wisdom that nature is able to offer us, right? How the trees grow straight, but they have roots down deep, and how they're able to connect and communicate, and they're able to provide value to us as humans, right? And I also think about how Mother Nature, right? Just how your mom had all of the equipment prior to you getting here to sustain your life, right? Mother Nature also has everything that we need, whether we were here or not, to sustain us as well. And so to get back to that connection, man, to get back to what's important, which is, our connection to the physical world around us, but also connecting with our inner world from an anatomical perspective, but also from a spiritual perspective, because nature has so many lessons to teach how to take care of ourselves physically, but also how to take care of ourselves spiritually. And so personally, that's how I'm able to reconnect, to ground myself, maintain my grounding. And then, of course, how does this move from a micro perspective to a macro, and how we're able to apply this to business? I really think it's just taking some of these same values, some of these same ethics, and imbuing them into the businesses that we develop. Because as you just mentioned, these are things that are natural. These are things that are innate within us.
Yeah.
That when they're placed in front of us, it's like, okay, that feels pretty natural, right? To where, you know, going back to that cooperatively owned and operated element of we're all in this together, you know, communication, transparency, integrity, you know, leverage, the mastermind principle, right? All of these things. Being able to go back and grab the principle of Sankofa is extremely important for us as well, of, you know, being able to go back and get what was already there and bring it to the future, or being able to go back and to renew what was pre-existing is also extremely important.
Yeah. As someone who studied kite sociology and has studied kite social, kite injustice and social justice, are there particular things, ideas that you've got as kite bro and company that you want to invest in? Yeah, when you think about like communities, you think about business, but you also think about housing and building communities at that level. Because from my own perspective, one of the things that I think is we've lost over the years is when real estate is being built these days, more and more I see that the kind of green space, the playgrounds, all those things are being taken away. And so what we're doing is we're not only kind of have kids that are being born into this age no longer not got those open spaces where they can go and connect. They've also now got the challenge where they're encouraged to use devices. They're encouraged to use technology. So they've become increasingly isolated. And from my perspective, and I've done a lot of work within the property and the real estate sector here in the UK. And one of the things that I believe is that we need to get back to this idea where we actually build homes with community first. Yeah. And we start to integrate, businesses, and we integrate these ideas of these places that allow people to come together and allow people to connect. So you actually get to know your neighbors and you support your neighbors. And is that something that, as Bro and Company, that you're looking at? Are there challenges like that that you'd love to solve?
Man, that's a great question. I think access to quality of food is something, like you say, with Jemiah's work, the great work that he's doing with Crop Swap LA, and really just with the LA farmers market that he's developed out there. Access to food is extremely important. And I think that with access to food comes greener spaces that are much more conducive to better air quality, right, which are much more conducive to reminding us that life is all around us and that life sustains life. So that's definitely something there. Also, I really think it's really a situation of almost 85% of what we do has, and I only say 85% just to give ourselves some buffer to where somebody wants to do some research. They're like, oh, you said you only did business that was social enterprise based. The business, most of the business that we do is human centered. So whatever real estate projects that we'll be getting into, whatever companies that we'll be providing angel investment in, most of those, if not all of those, will have some social justice component. And even if it's not just a overt social justice component, there will be an innovation there surrounding people, because that's just as you mentioned, the trend that we're going to be seeing for the next 50 years is that the businesses that are able to connect with people and to able to balance the technology with that will be the ones that lead. So that philosophy has been winning for us so far. And so I think, you know, it'll pretty much permeate whatever we touch hereafter.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. If you were to look back, you know, what kind of words of wisdom, you know, would you share?
Man, particularly for me, if I were to look back, I would really just tell my younger self to trust myself, right? Because I think, you know, we're in a position that often as children, especially as good children, right, to where we're listening to the adults around us and we're taking cues and pointers from them around how to be. And, you know, sometimes we betray what our innate instincts are, what our inclinations are. So I think, you know, that conversation around nature versus nurture. But I think that I found myself coming back around to the genius ideas that I had when I was 13 years old, or the things that I wanted to do when I was 12. Yeah. And now that I'm 30, I'm getting back to those, like, okay, I wasn't far off. I knew exactly what I wanted to do. But with that, though, balancing that, I would, ironically, I have to also trust myself that the path that I took was the right path, right? And the timing is extremely important of everything. So trusting yourself, you know, being patient, of course, is always important. I also think that's another thing that separates me from many people, is that I'm able to think long-term. I don't have a problem with, you know, working towards a goal for 5 years, 10 years. Right? Yeah. I actually find solace in being able to work and being able to just dive into the work and to commit myself fully to that. So that's another thing. I know a lot of people don't necessarily have the attention span or the emotional wherewithal to be able to, right, continually give themselves to something that is growing at a steady pace, but not at a rapid pace, right? Yeah. Similar to plants, right? Where if you want a plant to grow, you can't pull it up by the roots and hope that it, you know, taller. You have to just continue to water it, continue to put it in the environment that it needs to thrive in, removing things from its environment that's causing it to not thrive. And so that's a component. And then also living by the principle, the Japanese principle of Kaizen, is continuous improvement. I think that's another piece that, so of those three things, I think Kaizen in conjunction with patience. And then of course, ultimately, man, just trusting yourself that your instincts, are on point. Don't deny your feelings, right? Again, going back to the balance of thinking versus feeling, is that you want to identify those feelings and you want to acknowledge them and you want to give them value, but you don't necessarily have to act upon them immediately. And you can take some time to analyze, okay, why am I feeling this way? What is this about? What have I been taught? Why do I have this turmoil? So on and so forth. Because, you know, a lot of people, especially in this day, I know we're often taught, and there's a famous phrase now, oh man, you need to get out your feelings, or he was in his feelings about it, or, you know, oh, he feels some type of way about it. And it's like, yeah, we all are humans and we have emotions, and feeling is a good thing, right?
Absolutely.
You know, and they say the best sword is a double-edged, right? Feeling is a double-edged sword. Making sure that we don't allow our emotions to work against us, but being able to take a metacognitive approach, if you will, and being able to examine why we're feeling and being able to put those things in place. And then, of course, you know, putting them to work for us, you know, deploying those feelings for productive ends.
Yeah, there's so much you said there that that could lead us down a whole another kind of path. You know, the idea about, parents and the influences we have, taking us off path and taking us away from these ideas. it's a whole another kind of like conversation that we could have just about that. And so, and you were right when you said, you know, you're people say you're deep. I think we could go deep, for now I want to be respectful of your time. And just thank you so much for kind of coming in onto the show and sharing with us quite so openly. We'll put some links underneath so as people can find out a little bit more about Bro Capital and Bro Company and what you guys are up to. And any kind of final passing comments before we say goodbye?
Man, I certainly want to just thank you for providing some of these great questions, really giving me the opportunity to address your global audience. Certainly appreciate this opportunity, and this is my first opportunity to be able to connect with a UK personality who is, you know, just on point with it, man. So this is actually my first time having an interview with someone who's across the Atlantic Ocean, man. So this was really good. I'm excited about it. Looking forward to connecting again once we have some more progress and some more updates to share, man.
Absolutely. Yeah. Do keep us posted. So I hope you enjoyed that, everyone. If you have got kind of questions, you want to know a little bit more about Bro Capital, I know the guys are keen on expanding this. Raz has already said. Yeah.
If I may say that, yeah. We are launching SIS Capital, SISS Capital, in July 2020. So that'll be the sister organization of Bro Capital. It is founded by women, led by women. Bro Capital is investing in SIS Capital. So they will be in business for themselves, but not by themselves. And So, we're excited about, being able to integrate and collaborate with Black women, because ever since our founding, Black women have always asked, can Black women join? Is there something for Black women? And we wanted to make sure that we created a safe space for Black men, again, going back to that culture, to be their authentic selves, right? Because we know how men often switch up when women are around. Yeah. And so we want to make a space to where men could truly be their, their vulnerable selves, their inquisitive selves, and jovial, right? Want to create that environment. Yeah. And now creating a space for women to do the exact same. And then, of course, collaborating, meeting in the middle for everybody. So Bro Capital was really founded to not only increase the financial wellness of Black men, but to really impact the entire diaspora. But we wanted to start with the men as the foundation. Yeah. And then, of course, being able to build out from there. And so SIS Capital is on the way. I'll provide links to that as well so that your audience can certainly see that. And anybody who's listening, certainly hope, and it was certainly my aim and my will that you were able to glean something from something I said, and I did my best to be my most authentic self today. So, I'm looking forward to all that comes from this opportunity. Thanks again, Pete.
Amazing. Thanks so much for your time.
Indeed. Thank you. Peace.
We are Sarva. The future of education starts here.